Welcome to Up to Date. I'm Steve Prasky. So what's going on in the world of politics? Well, what's not going on in the world of politics? Kansas Governor Sam Brownback is said to be in real political trouble. Over in Missouri, Governor Jay Nixon just had his veto of a major tax bill overridden, raising new questions about how much clout he's got midway through his second term. In Washington, President Obama and Congress stumble along without much of anything getting done. How much clout does anyone out there have remains something of a question. And finally, Republicans are scrambling to find a presidential candidate, and Kansas City should hear any day now whether it made a list of three cities that are finalists for the 2016 Republican National Convention. The political pundits are in the house, and here we go. Dave Helling covers politics at the Kansas City Star. David, how are you?
Great to be here.
Burdette Loomis is a political scientist at the University of Kansas. Bird, nice to have you.
Always great to be here.
And George Conner from Missouri State University will be joining us in just a few minutes. Well, in Kansas, the state's credit rating has been downgraded. State revenues are falling dramatically. The FBI is conducting interviews of some of the governor's former aides. All this, Bird, is happening as Governor Sam Brownback seeks re-election in this big election year. How much trouble is he in?
Boy, you know, I think you touch on that litany, and if you add the school bill that he signed, denying due process to teachers, you probably had the governor last week, the last 10 days, having as bad a week or 10 days as I've seen a governor in 35 years. So you start out with a Republican state. You start out with a governor who won, sweeping victory 4 years ago, made a bunch of promises, has carried through on some of those promises, particularly the tax cuts. And now we're seeing real vulnerability against an opponent that a year ago every Republican in the state would have been pleased to run against. You know, the two-term Obama delegate from Lawrence. I mean, boy, he sets it up. Right now,
his name is Paul Davis.
Paul Davis, the House Minority Leader. whom I've personally known since he was about 4 years old. I think right now you're talking a 50-50 race. Huh. We have thrown out governors. Mike Hay asked, talk about the second terms of Bob Bennett and Mike Hay. Mm-hmm. We hold governors accountable. And right now, with Sam Brownback's job approval rating in the mid-30s and not going anyplace, and him being very well defined in the Kansas electorate right now, I think he's got serious problems.
Dave Helling, serious problems or not?
Oh, yes, quite serious. And, in a state like Kansas where Sam Brownback should cruise – without even breaking a sweat, I think it's fair to say that he's perspiring a little bit right now after the events that you described and Bird described. Having said that, it's still a very Republican state. And Paul Davis is, he may be recognized at least by name by a lot of Kansans, but I don't think a lot of people sort of understand what his alternatives might be or what his reason for running is, and so he has a bit of a hurdle to overcome as well. What I do think the events of the last 2 weeks have done for him, however, is they've drawn some attention nationally to this race and to the state of what's going on in Kansas in terms of the economy and the debt ceiling. It's getting a lot of national attention. And most of those stories, at least in the political press, say in essence, by the way, Democrats might have a chance in Kansas. That will bring money, attention, expertise, energy, excitement, all of the things that Davis needs. I still think Sam Brownback is the favorite in that race. It may be 51-49 and not 50-50, and it's a lot closer than he or anyone else in the party might have guessed. He can't afford much more bad news. I mean, Bird is right. We have thrown out governors now. Remember, Mike Hayden got tossed out, Steve, because of a problem with property tax classification and reclassification that caused a lot of taxes for people to go up, and there was a lot of frustration with that. It's harder to see how Kansans are going to throw out a governor for cutting their taxes because, people are taking home a little bit more money. A lot of people are. So whether that translates and all the other problems translates into movement at the ballot box, of course, we'll see in November. I still think he's the favorite, but only slightly, only slightly.
Let me get our listeners to chime in here what they think of Governor Sam Brownback's prospects in the wake of this last session, in the wake of this tumultuous last couple of weeks. 816-235-2888 is our phone number here. Again, 816-235-2888. Bird, Dave just made a great point. You really toss out a governor for cutting taxes. And the question that a lot of insiders have talked about now for some time is this idea of, you know, is the average Kansan, you know, if you've cut too much out of government, is the average Kansan suffering or seeing that as a result and more inclined to vote against the governor who's gone too far here?
Yeah, I think a lot of it is kind of on the come. You can see these budget numbers that are going to plummet, and the $93 million might have been the first big sign of that. The other thing that is happening is that lots of the state is taking away either tax breaks for localities, forcing localities, changing classification on localities, or pushing taxes down to localities.
Forcing them to raise taxes.
As with schools. Mm-hmm. So that's occurring to an extent. Whether the dots are all connected is another matter. I do think the other side of this is just various constituencies. Local government officials are very unhappy, again, with the sense that the state knows everything. Teachers are extremely unhappy, and they're a mobilizable group.
Mm-hmm.
I think that your sense here is that you were always hoping, for Democrats at least, you'd get this coalition of most of the Democrats, a good chunk of independents, and then the 20% most moderate Republicans. I honestly think that, and that's certainly the Kathleen Sebelius formula.
Mm-hmm.
I actually think that there are more available Republicans out there right now. If you talk to Republicans, mainstream, small-c conservative Republicans who have gone along with the Republican Party for the last 40 years, they just see Sam Brownback as different. Now, whether they'll pull the lever for Paul Davis and their friends will pull the lever, that's another matter. But I think you've got a substantial number of real traditional Republicans feeling that this is not the Kansas that they've grown up with over the last 30, 40, 50 years.
And I think that that feeling is particularly keen in Johnson County, where a Republican has to do very, very well to have any chance of winning statewide. And it's based largely, Steve, on practical considerations. You know, is Sam Brownback actually executing the job as governor? You know, I think on an ideological basis, most Republicans kind of agree with Sam Brownback. But in Kansas, as in most states, you also expect your governor to execute sort of the blocking and tackling of government. That's
mm-hmm.
why the downgrade of the debt is particularly harmful, because I think Republicans in Johnson County understand that. They understand that when Moody's or any other rating service looks at your state and decides that the finances are sufficiently shaky that you're going to have to pay more for the money you borrow.
Well, we haven't seen that in Kansas in a long time.
And that
time,
is a failure of execution. That's what got Mike Hayden. Mike Hayden got nabbed because people thought he wasn't up to being governor. And if the feeling begins to grow that Sam Brownback has made poor decisions in executing executive leadership in mm-hmm. the state, then I think he's in serious trouble. That's the case that Davis has to make, that Sam Brownback is wrong ideologically, but he's not competent to be governor. And if he can make that case, then he has a real chance.
I got one thing to add on that, and that's why the FBI investigation
yes.
may be important, because it's a different – And I agree. I'm not sure that any law has been broken. We'll see. You know, obviously we'll see about that to an extent. But you get the sense that the cronies are around,
mm-hmm.
and that's an execution issue as much it is as any kind of corruption issue.
Yeah.
You cut your and all governors do this to an extent. But the rapidity with which this was done and the comprehensiveness with which it was done have been pretty stunning.
Kansas likes competent, quiet government. That's what Kansas. It's not really Democrat versus Republican. It's
Bill Graves.
Bill Graves,
mm-hmm.
high and tight, make the trains run on time. And if you have a state house that's under federal scrutiny, coupled with a downgrade in your debt, that's enough to raise questions about core competency. That's the road that Paul Davis must travel, in my view, not so much on ideology, the tax cuts were good or bad or whatever.
You know, if you're a Republican in Kansas, you're looking at all this, if you're thinking about switching parties, or maybe even if you're not, we'd like to hear from you. 816-235-2888 is our number here. Again, 816-235-2888. You know, Burdette Loomis, there is a group of moderate Republicans already organizing to work against Governor Brownback. It's interesting, and we've seen this before, but we're seeing it very clearly this year. Former leaders like Rochelle Cronister, Joan Wagnon, who's a Democrat, the leader of the Democratic Party, Sandy Prager, maybe others who are organizing actively in opposition to Governor Brownback. Big deal or not?
Boy, you know, it's like Charlie Brown in the football. Geez, you know, if you were waiting for moderate Republicans, if Democrats were waiting for moderate Republicans to rescue them, it really is like Lucy pulling the football away time and time again. Now, maybe the football will stay down this year.
Mm-hmm.
I think there's more of this activity. I think through a couple of groups, there's some serious money coming in. And I think that you have it's a wider group. You also have this women's group with Jill Docking, Rochelle Cronister, et cetera. So I think it's up in the air. But as someone who's looked at this for a long, long time, I think that I wait the day that the moderate Republicans weigh in heavily, weigh in with money, weigh in with organization to do it.
Mm-hmm.
I think that Kathleen won many of them over, got their votes, their money.
Mm-hmm.
But this time with Paul Davis, a less visible candidate, and an off-year election, I really think you need that boots on the ground organization. There's some indication that's coming along. In my backyard, former State Senator Wint Winter is doing a fair amount of work along those lines. But boy. If you had a dollar for every time moderate Republicans had, you know, talked big and then not come through, you'd be rich.
But no question, Dave Helling, we've gone from a situation in Kansas where 6 months ago, you know, everyone looking at this race was like taking a big yawn and saying, so what? We've gone to a situation where there's absolutely no doubt here. I think Republicans and Democrats would agree of all stripes that we're going to have ourselves a race in Kansas this summer.
Yeah. And the other thing to keep in mind, too, is that the Brownback people are not powerless in responding in the next 6 months. And what I think their strategy will be, we've already seen a bit of a hint of this, Steve, is they're going to try and nationalize the election and make it a little bit about ideology. They've already started that when they sort of blamed Barack Obama for the shortfall in revenue. You'll hear Obamacare over and over and over in the governor's race, which all of us will be squawking is irrelevant, but to the voter may be relevant and may be one way to sort of rally people to Brownback's side. You're also hearing some chatter now that the tax cuts were not so much about growing jobs and bringing people to the state, but that it was Kansans were overtaxed, that they deserved a break, that the state didn't need to take as much of your money, which, again, is an ideological argument, not necessarily a practical one. So I think, you know, we haven't really seen their response yet to any of this.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, the campaign in many ways hasn't even been joined, which, of course, is, you know, par for the course in the current environment. I think around Labor Day, we'll see a real outline of where these two candidates and campaigns stand. Brownback trying to make it a national, ideological, come-home Republicans race. And Paul Davis will say, no, in essence, we need someone who is practical, who can execute, who will not get us into trouble with schools or the budget or Moody's or any of this other stuff. And we'll see how the people vote.
Let's go to some phone calls here. 816-235-2888. Jeff from Lenexa. Jeff, you're on Up to Date with our pundits, Dave Helling and Burdette Loomis. Good morning.
Good morning. Hi, Dave. Jeff Thornburg. I've known Dave for a number of years.
Yeah.
And I guess my comment, Paul Davis, my perception of him is that he's a force for education. And having just put three girls through the higher education in the state of Kansas,
wow,
it's really, really obvious that, you know, when I was in college in the 70s, the state funded approximately 50%. Of college, of higher education funding.
Mm-hmm.
And now it's down to probably 12, I don't know, maybe 15%. And we've seen those tuition rates, even though Kansas is still pretty affordable at the higher for higher education, it's something that the state, and I'm a sixth-generation Kansan for what it's worth, but if you go back and study the history, originally when the state universities were started, the idea was that in-state residents would be provided a higher education for free.
Mm-hmm.
It was there was no tuition for many, many years, decades.
Yeah, Jeff, look, I appreciate your comments. Let me get a comment from Burdette Loomis here from the University of Kansas, our residential higher education expert. It is a different day.
First of all, Jeff, thanks for sending three kids to I assume to KU or into Kansas higher education. I hope they got a great education. You're right that it was about 50%. It's now down to about 20%, not down to 12. We raise a lot of money privately.
Explain that stat. It's down to
20% of the is funded by the state.
80% by the
Tuition more than anything else by far.
Okay. Yeah.
And in a sense, you can think of tuition as I'm sure Jeff may as kind of a tax on parents who are sending their kids. That's not going to change. That's happened across the country, state university after state university.
Mm-hmm.
I do think that with Governor Brownback, he has gone around the state saying he supported higher education, and then when push comes to shove in the budget, has not supported it as much as he said. And so, you know, this turns out to be a legitimate election issue. But if you're going back to 40% or 50% or free tuition, that's just not happening.
Those days are over.
They're gone.
Jeff, thanks for the call. Jordan from Overland Park, you're on Up Today. Good morning.
Good morning. Let's suppose that Mr. Davis were to win the governorship.
Yeah.
Okay? He has a completely dominant Republican left-leaning or right-leaning House and Senate. What could he do? The damage has already been done. The governor, before he ran for office, said exactly what he was going to do, and he has done it. We're kind of locked into a very bad situation. I can't see it being reversed, even if Davis were to win.
That's a very interesting point, Dave Helling.
And very astute.
Paul Davis wins. Sure. What difference does it make?
Well, it will be 4 years of war with the legislature if he's the elected governor and the Republicans maintain control, which almost everyone thinks that they will. Although I think financial reality might intrude upon that a little bit. Let's face it. If Sam Brownback is reelected, the next 4 years are going to be extraordinarily difficult because
of the financial woes the state's facing.
Unless there's a major turnaround in employment opportunity in the state of Kansas, which has not yet been evident, the shortfalls in the Kansas budget will become quite dramatic in the next 2 to 3 years. And so whoever is governor will have an enormous challenge on his or her hands going forward. And so I think there will be a time. And then, by the way, on top of that, wait for your Supreme Court to weigh in on school finance, which is, that's still ticking. So, the caller is absolutely right that stalemate is very likely in Kansas, very much like we have in Missouri, by the way, where Jay Nixon has to use the power of persuasion and the veto pen to get what he wants and more often than not doesn't get it. But so I think that's what we look forward to. If Sam Brownback is reelected, it won't be smooth sailing by any means. I think he even knows that. I think that there will have to be some mid-course corrections, whether that means tax increases, further budget cuts, we don't know, but it's going to be difficult, to say the least.
Just very briefly, before we switch to Missouri, Burdette Loomis, Secretary of State Chris Kobach is up for reelection this year. His Democratic opponent is Gene Shorthoff, a former state senator. Kobach has ruffled a whole bunch of feathers when it comes to his stands on immigration, voter ID, that kind of thing. Does the Democrat have a shot in this race, or what do you think?
I think that Gene Shorthoff has a shot. But if it's almost an archetypal moderate Republican who now has turned to run as a Democrat. It's remarkable to me, is after all the feathers that have been ruffled in the national publicity, that Kobach doesn't even have a higher profile. He still has a fair number of negatives. I think she really needs to raise some money and get money spent on her behalf to take Kobach seriously to a close race.
I want to flip over to the Missouri side. I want to bring George Conner into our conversation. He's a professor of political science at Missouri State University down in Springfield. And, George, you know, it's always a pleasure to have you. Good morning.
Good morning, Steve. Good morning, Dave. Thanks for having me.
Well, last week, the Republican-led General Assembly in Jeff City overrode Governor Jay Nixon's veto of that major tax cut, George. That means the cut is going into effect over Nixon's objection here. This struck me as a moment in Missouri. What does this say about Governor Nixon's clout in the state, because he campaigned so hard against this tax cut, not only this year, but last year as well? George, how do you see it?
Well, I think it's not quite a lame duck, you know, in the normal sense, but I think the dynamics in the legislature, the electoral politics in the House and the Senate, the election needs of the members of the General Assembly probably dictate public policy over the general needs of the state. I think Governor Nixon was, you know, playing a losing hand. It was a great coincidence that Moody's, as you guys discussed earlier, you know, lowered Kansas's bond rating right before the vote, but that wasn't enough to sway the General Assembly. Mm-hmm. But I do think in the end it's politics over policy.
Mm-hmm. Well, why did Nixon lose this year, George? Because last year, similar issue, but he won. Why?
I think there were two things. I think the Republicans had a year to get their house in order. I think the Republican Party in both chambers was more unified than they were last year. Last year, Governor Nixon had a mistake in the bill on the prescription drug issue that was going to affect seniors potentially, and there was an awful lot of phone calls from, you know, senior citizens to the representatives, and they were kind of iffy on that issue. He came up with sort of a Hail Mary. This is going to eliminate the taxes on the,
that's
on the
right,
very rich. There's another mistake in the bill, but that one was a little bit more esoteric. It didn't hit grandma and grandpa as directly. And then the timing of this one was different in the sense that they did it, you know, in the legislative session with time to override the veto.
Yeah.
So I think those two factors together enabled the Republicans to override this time.
Dave Helling, does this defeat that Governor Nixon suffered last week with this veto override, I mean, how does it change your image of the governor and how much clout he has going forward in the final 2 years of his administration?
Well, it was a setback. I mean, I think George is right.
Yes,
to some degree. It is the first sign that Jay Nixon is clearly a lame duck, can't run again, can't really threaten members of the legislature. As you wrote in a column, which I think was very accurate in the newspaper, Jay Nixon, you know, in some degrees is reaping what he has sowed in terms of not helping other Democrats, not really building the party, hoping to sort of hold the line against the Republican takeover in the state by the force of his own personality and rhetoric. And the clock ran out. I mean, he ran out of things to say. He wasn't able to go across the state in the plane and have, you know, events three or four times a day to rally opposition to this bill. The Republicans were smarter about what they drafted. And let's be, you know, clear, the Missouri bill cuts taxes, but not in any way as aggressively or drastically as the Kansas mm-hmm. bill did. You know, it phases it in. There's a trigger. I mean, ultimately, there'll be some tax relief in the state, but it's not like the Kansas bill. I think the Republicans understood that, pushed it through, and now we're seeing the last 2 years of Jay Nixon unfold.
Well, here we have a caller from Missouri who wants to talk about Kansas, Daryl from Savannah, Missouri. Daryl, good morning.
Yeah, good morning. I lived right outside of Wichita, and I was just fascinated that the governor was trying to shuffle the money after the tax cuts. And the two things is, Moody warned him when they said that you have to reinvest in this education. I couldn't understand why Moody would say, oh, well, that's going to be a bad thing. It's going to cost you. And it hasn't been 5 months, 6 months, and now Missouri is going down that exact same path. And I just wonder how we're going to get forward with nobody wants to pay, obviously, a tax. I don't mind if I have to pay a couple more dollars in taxes. But how are we going to fund this education and move this technology forward that right now we're currently putting fiber optic out in the farms of Missouri because you can't put it in where the corporations don't want it, basically. And I mean, it's just such a huge future that we're demolishing for our children.
Daryl, thank you for the call. George Conner, how do you move Missouri and Kansas forward if you're cutting taxes by as much as taxes are getting cut?
Well, I think on the Missouri side, as Dave pointed out, you know, we're not making that drastic cut. I mean, the assumption is we're not going to cut these taxes until the revenues increase to a certain point. But I think even before you talk about the tax cut, Missouri hasn't been able to fund their funding formula, the K-12, in years. And so even without the tax cut, Missouri isn't investing enough in K-12 education, and they're certainly not investing in higher education. Again, despite some of the rhetoric from the General Assembly and from the governor, Missouri already isn't spending money on education, and I think the tax cuts are only going to make this worse. And ultimately, what's going to happen on the Kansas side, people like Johnson County are going to have to foot the bill for what the state is not paying, and they can maybe afford it. But what about Wichita? What about, you know, the outlying areas? And the same is true in Missouri. We already have some serious shortcomings in the St. Louis and the Kansas City school districts, and so the suburban school districts might be able to absorb some of these cuts by increasing, you know, their property taxes. But statewide, I think everyone's going to suffer.
Burnett Loomis from KU, no question that what happened in Missouri in terms of tax cuts, a very different situation in Kansas, right? They're not similar in many ways.
No, I don't think so. And part of this is what we're seeing going to happen. I mean, in Kansas, it's starting to happen maybe with a rush. And one of the interesting things will be to look at revenue reports as we head toward November. If those revenue reports keep getting worse, Sam Brownback is in more and more trouble. Mm-hmm. But I'd suggest on public education, higher education, and K-12, is that you are looking at a very different broad state of mind. And that is that I would say out of 165 members of the Kansas legislature, I'll bet there are 70 or 80 that have no confidence at all in government schools. They wouldn't even call it public education. Mm-hmm. And so honestly, not funding them adequately doesn't seem to be a huge problem. And I don't think I'm exaggerating here. And we've had a state, particularly in Kansas, where there has been this moderate conservative support for education, not at super high levels. My wife was a school teacher for many years, and you know, certainly not getting rich. But honestly, there was substantial support, and I think I see that more generally eroding. And a lot of the people in Kansas, a lot of legislators, would think that was a perfectly good thing.
Yeah. Well, one of the things that I think Bert is identifying is a fundamental divorce, if you will, between the old idea in Kansas and Missouri that support for public education was a good, even if you didn't have any children or your children had left home or your children were not in school, because quality education guaranteed property values, guaranteed a healthy community. That was the prevalent idea in both states for decades.
Mm-hmm.
That no longer exists as a political matter. Merits aside, in essence, what Missouri and Kansas is saying is, if you don't have kids, if you don't have kids in college, if you're not sending your kids to the public schools, we've got a deal for you. And so that connection between people who didn't directly benefit from schools and those who did has been broken. And that, Steve, is part of a broader critique in both states, and while we're all right that the Kansas tax cut bill and the Missouri tax cut bill are different, the reality is it's part of a worldview that's very similar, which is a shift of taxation away from capital onto sales and excise taxes and to a certain degree labor and property, and a shift away from public goods like education, transportation, and to privatizing those things. That's a worldview that's very similar in the two states. It's quite conservative, and we're seeing the results of that view, and we'll get a referendum on it in Kansas in November.
You get one more call before a break here. Bill from Stillwell on the Kansas side. Bill, good morning.
Yes, yeah, so the last commentator just basically stole some of my thunder, but I appreciate you saying that. I've owned at least three technology businesses in Kansas City. One did over $30 million in business. And I am moving my business to San Jose, California in October of this year. The reason is I cannot find skilled people in Kansas City to do the high-tech chemical testing that I need to do for my customers. And I've been in Kansas City for 32 years, okay? And I've talked to Sam Brownback's office. I've talked to the Speaker of the Kansas House about 5 years ago about this issue, because the decision was, do we stay in Johnson County? Do we go to Jackson County? Well, if you compare Jackson County, Johnson County, and the U.S. Census Bureau has got all this information out there. You've got 27% of the people in Jackson County with the 4-year college degrees, 56% in Johnson County. But if you compare that to San Jose, for example, we're not even close. And the reason why we're going to keep Sprint here or not keep Sprint here is going to be directly as a result of whether or not the state of Kansas can bring in the people from overseas, from India and China, or bring in people, attract people to Kansas who want to send their kids to a better school. K through 12 is the key as far as poverty is concerned, because if you compare the state of California to the state of Texas, for example, even though the rates of graduation for advanced degrees are somewhat similar, but the rates of graduation from high school is quite different. Mm. You got about a 92-93 percentile graduation rate in California. Remember, California's got 38 million people and Texas got 26 million. So they're graduating 6 million less people in Texas from high school than they are in California. Now, you look at the rates of poverty between those two states, even though they're fairly high-tech states, you'll see that Texas ranks dead last next to Mississippi in the rates of poverty. And if people don't get that, more people like Bill are going to leave Kansas City and go where the jobs, where the people are with
Bill,
the skills.
Bill, I appreciate the phone call. Bird, he just said a lot.
I think that this was really an eloquent statement of someone who has faced this over many years, lots of information, and really is making a key business choice here.
Mm-hmm.
I think it runs so counter to the core Brownback Republican argument.
Let's take a break. When we come back, we'll continue with our political pundits. We'll turn to President Obama, the Affordable Care Act. We'll talk about the GOP presidential race. Where's that thing heading? And what kind of shot does Kansas City have at getting the 2016 Republican National Convention? We'll be joined in our second half by George Conner, Burdette Loomis, and Dave Howling. I'm Steve Kraske of the Kansas City Star, and you're listening to Up to Date on KCUR. This hour, we're talking with our political pundits, Dave Helling, Burdette Loomis, George Conner. Let's turn to President Obama. The polls seem to be all over the place on the president and the Affordable Care Act these days. This week, at least, a new CNN poll showed that most Americans want Congress to leave Obamacare alone or to make it better. George Conner, is the country beginning to finally accept this law, or have I just cherry-picked a finding from the most recent poll that's out here?
Well, you might have cherry-picked it, but I think it is probably true that Americans are finally getting used to the implementation and the rollout, but that doesn't mean there's an enormous amount of resistance. I still think that here in Missouri, for example, we are still vehemently opposed to Obamacare. And as we talked about earlier, as much as Jay Nixon fought against the tax cut and lost, he was even more vehement about expanding Medicaid, and that never even got on the table. And so I think, nationwide, the polls seem to suggest that Obamacare is being more accepted. But I think in the state of Missouri, there's still a tremendous amount of resistance.
Yeah. Dave Helling, has Obamacare turned a corner here, or is that too premature?
Well, as a political matter, it hasn't turned a corner, at least in some states, Kansas and Missouri among them. As a practical matter, though, as more and more people sign up for subsidized health care through either the national exchange or their state exchanges, it will become increasingly difficult for Republicans to push for full repeal, because it will generate story after story of families who now have health insurance who would be kicked off and not have health insurance if the bill is completely repealed. And I think Republicans get that they may be running out of time to make the case that the bill has to be dismissed lock, stock, and barrel. And instead, they may, in the next session, for example, chip away at parts of it. I think there's a proposal I read about today where they're going to exempt veterans from some of the requirements. I mean, so you can get it parts of it, but the idea of wholesale repeal seems to be declining as an option for the Republican Party. My colleagues may disagree with
that. Bernard Loomis, do you think this issue of health care and the Affordable Care Act and the concerns about it, is that going to be enough to give Republicans control of the U.S. Senate later on this year? Because they sure are beating the drum on the ACA.
Yeah, I mean, I think that the Republicans have about a 50%, maybe a little better chance to control the Senate in the upcoming election. Some of it is related to Obamacare, but I think you look at these Senate races, and they are individual state races. Sometimes it plays, sometimes it doesn't.
Mm-hmm.
And so you get, you know, even a state like Arkansas, which should be, you know, heavily anti-Obamacare, Pryor's doing pretty well. And so
the incumbent senator down there.
Right. So, you know, I think there'll be some nationalization of this campaign. There always is. But I think if you come back to, say to Kansas, you're talking about big government liberals and Brownback trying to talk about Paul Davis in that vein, Paul Davis throws up his hands and said, I'm a representative from Lawrence, Kansas. I'm not involved in that at all. And we do have 2.5 more years of Obamacare being implemented before there's a new president even. That's a long time for a big program to get embedded. Now, I do think, as with almost all big federal programs, there are ways to fix this. Indeed, you might find, strangely enough, on Obamacare, Republicans and Democrats in a future Congress coming together to actually do some work on it. But right now, I think this is maybe the last big year as a political issue.
Right, in part because, and let's not forget this, Obamacare remains a very potent symbol. You know, the realities of whatever it is are one thing, but as a symbol, as a word that symbolizes, again, an ideology, a worldview, it's very potent
graph around the internet the last couple of days. You may have seen this. Fox News, number of word count, Obamacare versus Benghazi. And Obamacare, Obamacare plummeted.
Right.
Benghazi shot up. In a sense, they'd signed off Obama as a political mantra and hit the Benghazi button.
Now that's
a distorted view of reality, but I do think it's an indicator of whether they think it's how potent the political element is.
George Conner, a political scientist at Missouri State University. You know, Republicans are needing a candidate for the White House, and right now they don't seem to have anybody who seems to be scaring Democrats. Where do you think we're headed here, George?
It's really hard to say. I mean, it's sort of like the conversation we're having in Missouri. The Republicans need to run somebody in a primary for governor. It seems to me the Republican Party is more interested in taking down the potential Democratic candidates than they are in trying to figure out, you know, who's the best candidate for their own party. You don't.
Mm-hmm.
It's more about. I mean, if you think about what Burdett just said, you know, Benghazi is not the equivalent to Obamacare in a policy sense. It's strictly political and it's strictly targeted at Hillary Clinton.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, their focus on, you know, emphasizing Benghazi over all other things is to take Hillary Clinton and her potential nomination down a peg, you know, now as opposed to waiting until later. So I think their focus is anti Hillary Clinton as opposed to you trying to figure out who's going to be running.
Yeah, and we just had a conversation on this show with Mr. Cannon and David Von Draley, two national political pundits looking at the national race. And boy, from the tenor of that conversation, I really came away with this idea that, Hillary Clinton is going to be awfully tough to beat, the first woman, the momentum that will be behind that. Bert, are you seeing that too as you look at the way 2016 is shaping up?
I think there are two things here, maybe three. The first thing is structurally, there's a substantial advantage in the Electoral College for Democrats as of right now, with states like Florida or Virginia becoming increasingly Democratic. Secondly, you have Hillary Clinton and the Obama operation combining forces, probably with no big primary.
Mm-hmm.
This is one of the great political – the Obama campaign was one of the great political operations of all time. And they are really former opponents, to be sure. But Obama owes the Clintons a lot, and they really are coming together.
And that's so unusual, because after 8 years of a president from one party, typically you would have a scrum in that party for the nomination coming out of that, wouldn't you?
But in some sense, it's like the Republicans normally are. The next best person is there waiting. And in this instance, Hillary lost by a hair in 2008. She served with, you can argue how much distinction, but certainly she served as Secretary of State. And as you point out, is the first woman with a Democratic Party that's already heavily advantaged by women. Women vote more. So the structural elements are there. And I do think it's making people think more about, say Jeb Bush, for example, mm-hmm. about whether he has that fire in his gut that he needs to run.
Dave Helling, Jeb Bush?
Well, maybe. I mean, he's making some noise like he might be taking a look
he
at
sure
it. The idea
is.
Of a Bush versus Clinton race in 2016 gives me the willies.
Frankly,
yeah. I think the Republicans, Steve, are looking for a surprise candidate. If they're going to beat Hillary Clinton, let's assume for a minute she runs, which I don't think is a completely sure thing. In part because it's a very difficult thing to do. You know, running for president is hard work, and she may just decide, you know, I don't really need this.
But boy,
we've
sure gone a long way down this road.
Oh, no, I agree with that. You know, but you also get this sort of, you know, I'll never forget Hillary Clinton came here in 2007, I think, to Kansas City and held a news conference with African-American leaders and Emmanuel Cleaver, and the ministers were all solidly behind her candidacy. And I think you and I may have covered that. And we both said, you know, she's a lock. There's no way that she's on her game. She's smart. And then, of course, Barack Obama became the nominee and the president. So, you know, before we say, you know, start talking about Madam President, we have to think about that a little bit, particularly since she will reflect a little bit of the 1990s to a lot of voters, you know, particularly younger voters who became so excited about Barack Obama to, in essence, contemplate, you know, Hillary Clinton or Jeb Bush. You don't quite see the dynamism that you might have seen. And so I think the Republicans might look to a Scott Walker or some
Wisconsin governor,
a younger, perceived, more dynamic candidate, someone who doesn't have a lot of ties
Paul
to the
Ryan.
Past. Paul Ryan is another good example, another Wisconsin congressman. If that's the case, I think that they'll be able to grab some of the excitement, or at least they'll think they will be able to, that maybe the Democrats did when Obama was the candidate. But, you know, we had a lot of time to go before that.
Let me get our listeners involved here. Whether you want to talk about Sam Brownback, Jay Nixon, the 2016 presidential race, wherever you want to go, 816-235-2888. You certainly, George Conner, couldn't see Hillary Clinton winning Kansas. Could you see Hillary Clinton winning Missouri in 2016, or has the state become too red in your view?
I think the state has become too red, both ideologically and demographically. And you got to remember, back with President Obama, we voted for President Obama.
Right.
And I find that remarkable. I mean, for as much distaste as the state of Missouri has for President Obama, the Democrats in the state still preferred President Obama over Hillary Clinton. I think her negatives, I mean, if you think about it in those terms, are so much higher that, you know, she makes a very big target for the Republicans. Now, while I agree that they may not have a candidate right now, you know, what they need to do is find a fresh face, as was being suggested, but someone who can also exploit the negatives that Hillary Clinton has. I mean, whether it's Benghazi or Bill Clinton, but certainly here in Missouri, Hillary Clinton is not going to be a popular Democratic candidate outside of Kansas City and St. Louis. And I think Dave pointed out, if this is going to be the year of the woman, a Hillary Clinton nomination for the Democrats for the presidency might actually help someone like Catherine Hanaway, ironically, you know, the year of the woman helping a Republican.
Running for governor, perhaps, in 2016, Bird.
Yeah, I guess I'd say that both something to both George and Dave, that reminding people of the 1990s might not be the worst thing in the world, with an economy that every time – and the other thing with, you know, Bill Clinton, maybe a negative, but a guy who left – office with a 60% approval rating, probably highly approved of today, and arguably the best natural politician still in the United States.
Yeah.
So, you know, I think that we all know Hillary Clinton. She's got her baggage, to be sure. But I do think that this idea of being the first woman would really be powerful. The second thing is, if there's not a strong primary challenge, a lot of the arduous nature of a campaign is taken away.
Mm-hmm. To a degree, yes, no question. Mm-hmm. And just to finish the thought, Democrats are aching to nominate a woman, mm-hmm. aching to do it, to follow after nominating Barack Obama. They really want to
show the big tent, to show we are the party of women.
And just to nominate
women,
a woman,
yeah.
you know, mm-hmm. it would be historic for that to happen. And if so, I think if she runs, she's definitely the nominee. I would just say in rejoinder to my good friend Burdette Loomis that he's right about the 90s being, you know, such a good economic time. But for particularly younger voters, that's they don't remember that at all.
Yeah.
I mean, they were all 3, 4, 5 years old at the time. They'll be looking forward, and they'll want someone they think – like Barack Obama, you know, his whole argument was, you know, we're the generation we've been waiting for. We're the change. You know, younger voters still like that idea. And I'm not sure they see Hillary Clinton as the embodiment of
it. That's interesting. Let's go to Libby from Overland Park. Our phone number here, 816-235-2888. Libby, good morning. Libby's not there. Let's go to Steve from Mission. Steve, good morning.
Hey, guys. Hello?
Hi, Steve. You're on the air.
Oh, okay. I kind of wanted to ask about the FBI investigation into selling Brownback staff and the selling access. I think that story's kind of got a little bit underplayed in all this. I mean, is it going to be difficult for Sam Brownback's already running uphill with a potential FBI investigation of selling access to CanCare with his chief campaign officer, his chief aide. I mean, this is going to be uphill treading for him. Does that portend well for the Davis docking team?
David?
Well, yes. I mean, again, we'll see what the FBI investigation yields. We have no indication, none, that it touches Sam Brownback directly, that it involves him as a candidate or as governor. It only involves people who had left his office. So far, it hasn't touched anyone who was directly under employ of Sam Brownback. But again, it gets to a level of competence and concern that particularly Republicans on this side of the state will have that he has failed to execute the basic blocking and tackling of government. And in that sense, it's very important. Kansas is not used to scandal. Kansans don't like scandal. They rarely have it, not to the sense that they have it in Missouri or Illinois or lots of other states. So even a hint of scandal adds up when you couple it with these other problems. That's why, again, it's a very close race.
You know, we haven't touched on this whole idea of Kansas City being a potential host city for the 2016 Republican National Convention. George Conner, I'm just curious from your standpoint down in Springfield, other cities very much in the running for this, Dallas, Denver, Las Vegas. What do you make of Kansas City's prospects, just looking at it from your vantage point, George?
The normal rule of thumb would be, you know, where can it help us? And I think it doesn't help necessarily to have the convention in Kansas City. They're going to win. Republicans are going to win Kansas. The Republicans are going to win Missouri. So in a political sense, I'm not sure it helps. Now, it could be a chance for the Republicans to showcase, you know, effective policy. So, you know, Kansas has got a big tax cut. Oh, wait, now Moody's has, you know, reduced their bond rating. So if we're going to showcase some of Republican successes, you know, it might be a good idea. But I don't know that Kansas City is going to be able to, you know, to do that. If I was a Republican, you know, national committee, I think I would be looking elsewhere.
Well, so much for rooting for the hometown team, George. Thanks very much. Dave Hilling, how do you see the prospects for this thing?
I think we're still in the running. I still think the dark horse is Cincinnati, one of the six cities left. Ohio, John Boehner, Mitch McConnell right across the river. There mm-hmm. are some reasons to go there. I think Las Vegas's stock is dropping dramatically, as I always expected that it would. I just don't see the Republicans going to Las Vegas for their convention. But Dallas has a lot of money. Denver did a very good job for the Democrats. Ohio remains a competitor. So, Kansas City's chances are not my friend Mike Mahoney has said Kansas City is probably everyone's second choice. And if it gets to that, maybe that's how we win.
And we're going to have some news on this in the next week or two.
Yeah, we think the
RNC is expected to limit and lower the number of cities to three finalists any day now. Right.
And then visit the entire committee would then visit those three cities, make a recommendation, and we'd get a vote of the full Republican National Committee sometime in the late summer or early fall.
So that's coming up any day now. Well, we are out of time. I want to thank all our callers, as well as Dave Helling from the Star, Burdette Loomis from the University of Kansas, and George Conner from Missouri State University. Down in Springfield. Gentlemen, always good to have you guys. Thanks so much for taking some
time.
Thank you. You bet.
Thanks, Steve.
You can find more information about all of our broadcasts. Just go to kcur.org. Don't forget to follow KCUR on Facebook and this program on Twitter. We're at KCUR Up to Date. Our show is produced by Steven Steigman, Danny Alexander, Beth Lipoff, Cody Newell, and Jenny Witte. I'm Steve Kraske, and you are up to date.